folks. This is James French.
This is Ted Diamond.
And you're listening to the Awareness Connection, a podcast where we talk about health and human development and mind-body awareness. And we're coming off a long series of discussions about developmental movement, which is very fun to talk about. And as a follow-up to that, that four-episode series that we did on that topic, we talked about like anatomical systems, the architecture of the human body as it's designed by nature. A very cool subject. And this week, we're going to follow up on that, because the design is very interesting in that it can be interfered with. It can kind of go wrong. All right. And we're going to discuss that fact, and we're going to discuss maybe how to benefit yourself after it's gone wrong. You know, maybe some things that you can work on. So, Ted?
Yep. Yeah. So we talked about vertebrate design going, you know, how it evolved in developmental movement. You're looking at the different designs going toward being fully upright on 2 feet as we are. Yeah. And I think, James, you had commented that, you know, it'd be nice to talk about the practical side of what to do when you're having problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a good starting point is when we have, when we suffer from some musculoskeletal difficulty, like back trouble or shoulder pain, which are two of the most common, mm-hmm. we think that, you know, as young kids, all the tissues are healthy. We're not under a lot of stress. Everything works nicely. The joints are healthy. But as we get older, we're under more stress. We're doing repetitive actions. We damage parts and we try to fix it. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that how that shoulder works or how your back works is intimately connected with our upright design, which I think is the key to how those parts work. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, James.
We just think that we also just get older. The parts sort of like simply degrade.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which, you know, that's true to a point, but it doesn't explain why more and more children are having back problems or neck problems, even when they're teenagers or even earlier.
Yeah.
This is related directly to how we're using that system. So I think a practical component to mention about this, you know, this is one of the areas that I was struck by when I was learning about this. If you're having a shoulder problem, very often, if let's say you're having a problem with bursitis or some inflammation or rotator cuff issue, very often we explain the problem by describing it. We say, yeah. Oh, well, you have inflammation of the shoulder. Well, inflammation of the shoulder doesn't really tell me what my problem is. It tells me what the symptom is. It really doesn't explain why I have a symptom, what may be, you know, causing it. We just think that the description is the explanation. You're having a problem because it's inflamed.
Yeah.
What I was struck by very early on was the fact that my shoulders are related to my upright design. And when I could use that upright design more efficiently, my shoulders work better. And that's because the shoulders, being part of our upright design, are meant, in humans, are meant to kind of widen apart. Mm. In contrast to, let's say, a four-footed animal where the shoulders kind of round forward because they're really just part of the supporting forelimbs. In humans, the shoulders widen apart, and that widened quality in the shoulders is part of how they're meant to work efficiently. And I noticed that when my shoulders began to naturally widen apart, my tendency to get stiffness in my right shoulder mm-hmm. tended to go away.
Yeah.
So there's an example of how the shoulder is in fact part of our upright design. Mm-hmm. it shows us a definable part aspect of how the shoulder is meant to work and how we interfere with that. And it gives us a sense of what we could do about it. That's more than just trying to treat the inflammation or exercise a part.
Yeah.
And we could say more about that. Yeah.
Okay. 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 Yeah. It's, I don't know, maybe just to restate it for my own clarity, the upright design, this is what we've been talking about. This is the natural object. This is the object that was created by nature in this long series. You know, just to follow up on the past few episodes, it's just this created in this long series from, you know, things that were living in the ocean, came up on the land, and are designed to support themselves in a field of gravity on land. And it seems that, you know, nature does it pretty well. It's just that in human beings, it seems to go awry a little bit. And our everyday aches and pains pretty often have to do not just with, like, you know, repetitive stress, like we're often told, or like not just simply with age, because, you know, an 8-year-old can have back pain, but with sort of maybe malfunctioning of this upright support system based on, yeah, maybe some of the things that we do.
Yeah. And if you think about the shoulders, you know, just to continue with that example, if you think of the shoulders as having a kind of a natural design, the widening isn't just a characteristic of the shoulder or an aspect that helps it to function better. Like if you said, well, think of your head being lighter on the top of your spine. Well, that's sort of a nice idea that might give you a sense of not, I don't know, stiffening your neck muscles or something. It's more than that. It's not, we're not just speaking about a beneficial concept that helps to relieve tension. The the ability of the shoulders to widen apart is, in fact, the quality, the feature of the shoulders that ensures that they work properly. It is sort of the defining feature of well-functioning shoulders.
It's like the design spec, you know?
Yeah. Right. That's sort of the key design. Of course, it goes with the upright, because if you've interfered with the shoulders, you'll always be doing that as part of interfering with the upright. So we have to restore the upright and the shoulders and the widening of the shoulders, both. Yeah. When we do that, that's the key design spec that will ensure the optimal working of the shoulders. And we can talk a little bit about, you know, ways of restoring that if it's interfered with.
Yeah. Yeah, and as an analogy, I mean, it's like the design spec of a garden hose is like to be a cylinder that's not constricted, you know. And if it's literally tied up, you know, like on a garden hose, you can sort of you know, you can roll it up kind of carelessly, and it gets, you know, it sort of rolls in on itself. It maybe gets kinked up a little bit, and then it doesn't work. The design spec is to be an open cylinder with no kinks and with no all that stuff. So it isn't just beneficial for the hose. It isn't just like, oh, you know, the hose can work a little bit better if you think about, like, you know, corkscrewing a little bit. You actually have to unkink the hose. You have to literally unkink the hose for it to return to its actual functional design.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the sine qua non, thing without which not.
Exactly. I've been using a hose a lot lately, you know. So, you know, I have hose on the mind. So, I've got garden hoses on the mind.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you restore widening in the shoulders? So, let's talk about a couple of things. I was thinking about directing parts. I think that's an interesting part of it. Procedures is another one, and help from a teacher is a third one.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, one thing that will help the shoulders, if a skilled teacher knows how to work with you. They can take an arm, and they're not going to yank on it. It takes more skill than that. They're going to take your arm or support your arm in such a way that they could actually help restore length in muscles that are shortened, particularly, not just, but particularly in the pectoral region, the flexors in the front, which tend to get very narrowed and shortened, but not just there, also in back, deltoids, other muscle, the rotator cuff muscles around the joint. And when the teacher does that, that can bring about a more lengthened and widened out quality in the shoulders, which if you've never experienced it before, will feel kind of like the shoulder, very often will feel like the shoulders are sort of opened up and broad and your chest is opened up.
Yeah.
That's one very practical procedure. And you could do that, that a teacher can, you know, employ, but you could do it for yourself if you, in using a developmental movement, if you're lying on the floor in, it could be prone or semi-supine with your head on some books and your knees up, and just lay your arm out and just give the arm a chance to unravel out of the shoulder and back. And that can sometimes help the shoulder to begin to get back its natural length.
That's interesting.
So they're very practical things you could do to get this happening.
Yeah. So
and
like,
and very different than exercise. This is not about yanking, trying to stretch, but really won't restore length. That's just yanking muscles, or trying to exercise opposing groups. That won't do it. You can try to, if you feel this is tight and you exercise the opposing group, which those really aren't exactly opposing, but if you try to, you know, contract the muscles, the extensors in back, that will not get these to let go. They'll just go right back to being shortened.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is something that's really allowing muscles that are in contracted to let go into length, into natural length, and that's going to help the muscles, the shoulder, to begin to work properly.
Yeah, because this is more about, this is about restoring a functional design. It isn't, it isn't, you know, this is different than, okay, well, this muscle is weak and that muscle is too strong. And so we have to balance the, you know, contractile ability of both muscles. So you exercise the front one or something. And this is not about like, you know, so that's like one thing that it's not. But then you also said it's not about like athletic stretch either. You know, it's not about like dynamic stretching or static stretching, which is not what you're talking about.
No.
You know, you're talking about something very different here. This, and, you know, like the, you know, like the garden hose analogy, you know, it doesn't need to be stretched. It doesn't need to be pulled. It doesn't need to be strengthened. It needs to be unwound. If there's a kink in the garden hose, it needs to be unwound. And this, that's more like what you're talking about here.
Yeah. And this is a definable quality that you, if you're experienced with this, as you know, as someone who does this professionally and you work with people, you could just, you could put a hand on someone's shoulder and instantly know the rotator cuff muscles are overworked. There's narrowing in the shoulder here in the pectoral region. You can feel that the shoulders are raised and stiffened. And you also can recognize when all of that is starting to unravel, and you'll feel that as a kind of a widening out of the shoulder. The back will work better. It will affect the neck and head. And it's a clear functional improvement in how the shoulder works that you're aiming toward, that you can identify. You can identify how it's interfered with. You can identify how it works properly.
So speaking from the point of view of a professional who's working with a student, you know, who's like working with someone who comes to them with, say, a shoulder problem. What does it, you know, is it, you know, it's like, you know, to help someone unravel their shoulder, or, you know, to unfurl their shoulder in the way that you're speaking about it, you know, what does that entail? Is it like a holding still? Is it like, you know, you said it's not pulling, it's not stretching, it's not yanking. What does it entail as a professional who's going to be helping someone with their body?
Well, for one thing, the teacher if a teacher performed that procedure, they would themselves have to know how it works. And, you know, they would have to know how it works in themselves as a condition of being able to help someone else. If they don't, they're not, you know, you really can't help someone. But it's a quality of being able to support the shoulder in such a way that you could recognize how it's holding, and you're not trying to fix it, but by supporting it in a certain kind of skilled way in yourself, you can help the shoulder there's more to say about that because that's a whole teacher's art. But
yeah, it's cool. Okay. But like you said, this is also something that you can, that even more importantly, you know, your other list of things, you know, like the, you know, like getting help from a teacher was the last thing you mentioned. You said, you can, this is something that you can do on your own as well.
Yeah. So, as you know, learning how to, you know, support your arm in such a way that it can get the support it needs to be able to start to let go. That's a very simple procedure. There's more to say, but before we'll talk about the direction part, the thinking awareness part.
Yeah,
but before we get to that, I just want to mention, very often, if you said, I was thinking this, James, when I said that the shoulders have a way of working that's natural, it's interesting to me as a teacher, as a professional doing this as my, you know, as my profession, it's interesting to me that if someone says, well, Ted, what does it feel like? What does it look like when your shoulders work better? I could show them in myself. In general, that doesn't impress people. In general, people are more influenced by what they believe than what they see with their own eyes.
Yeah.
So if you were to show someone, well, let me show you, because my shoulders used to be all bound up and tight, you know, I mean, I was doing rock climbing and strenuous things when I was younger, and my shoulders were pretty tight. So for me, it was incredibly dramatic how much they could change and what it felt like.
Yeah.
But even if you showed people that and said, well, look how they've changed. Can I show you what it feels like when their shoulders widen and my back is working better, et cetera? They won't be impressed by that, because in general, people will come to the issue, will come to you with whatever belief they have about what the problem is. So if they have a belief that the problem is, let's say, I don't know, an injury that they had in the rotator cuff.
Like 10 years ago.
Yeah. They're going to say, well, sometimes they'll say, well, my shoulder, I injured it. So you can't help me. I need someone who can show me how I can heal that.
Mm-hmm.
So they might have a belief that there's something wrong that needs healing. They might have a belief that they have too much tension and they've become obsessive about the issue of tension.
Yeah.
They want something that feels like it's going to address tension. They might go to a body worker and the body worker does all kinds of stuff and they go, oh no, but that deep tissue stuff really helps me and it helps my shoulder. Of course, the fact that going back to activity, the shoulder will tighten up literally within seconds.
Yeah.
Won't affect them in the least. If they get relief from it, they'll say, that gives me relief, because what they secretly believe is there's something wrong that needs relief and treatment. And they'll go to the person that they believe has that knowledge or has that authority to help them. But to make this field become a little more rational, we have to actually be able to look at the design of the thing and say, I want to know really how does a shoulder work such that I can identify what's wrong with it and put it, restore the conditions under which it works better. I thought that I wanted to mention the belief issue, because I just think it's such a, you know, interesting, because, you know, it goes to the question of what the real issue is and whether people agree, because people will disagree and maybe I'm wrong, you know, but people will say, well, how do you know that's really what needs to happen? I think the problem is X, Y, Z. You say, well, okay, perhaps, but I think the shoulders, I think they have, they clearly work well in a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Beautifully in most 2-year-olds.
Yeah.
And you could see what the conditions are in the 2-year-old that you would like.
Yes. Yeah.
And to my mind, that's quite objective. To me, that's a question of fact. Proving it scientifically in such a way that we could test that, that's a different matter. Totally. We haven't figured out. I mean, there's 17 muscles attaching to each shoulder blade.
Mm-hmm.
That's 34 muscles right there. It's an incredibly complex system. There are a bunch of other muscles. We're not even talking about all the muscles of the deep muscles, the spine, the erector spine, and long muscles in the back, the whole rib cage, thorax, the abdominal area, all of that. It's a complex system. To actually demonstrate scientifically exactly what does what, no one's even come close to being able to do that. I don't think anyone's going to for a while, if ever. And but in the meantime, we can make a pretty good judgment about it just looking at children and just looking at the design in adults, you know.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Well, so, you know, the establishment of, scientifically speaking, what is the good condition that we're looking at in a 2-year-old, just like you're saying, that's not so easy to say, you know, but from the perspective of, I don't know, sentience, you know, from being a person with like the ability to see and the ability to practice and the ability to understand, you know.
Well, from an educational perspective, you know.
From an educational perspective, really.
Education will proceed to address problems that we can't look at scientifically.
Yes.
In fact, most of the problems that are really important are educational problems and not science. You know, we're not going to be able to look at morality or learning or cognition. These are things that we're trying to understand scientifically, but science can't get at the really meaningful learning processes involved.
Yeah.
So we have to get on with it at an educational level, even when we haven't arrived at a full science of the subject.
Yeah. 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 And it's, even though it's sort of difficult to some people will work with you professionally on, say, this problem. And just like you said before, the fact that their belief tells them that their problem is something else, that it's some maybe tension related, or maybe it's overuse related, and their relief is going to come from such and such treatment, and you're not giving it to them, therefore you're ineffective. That's a whole thing. That's a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just not the right student for you. That's not the right, you're not the right teacher, or you're not the right professional.
Right.
But, scientifically, it's much more difficult than that, because it's, you know, you get all these arguments, because there's so much detail that needs to be addressed. But like educationally speaking, you know, we can really get somewhere if a student and a teacher are giving a good faith effort, you know?
Yeah.
So
but it's not just that we can get somewhere. I'm also saying that we have to recognize that this is an educational problem, you know, and that's part of why we're doing this podcast. So we're looking at an area of study that's not going to be solved by science. Mm-hmm. Science can't get at most of these issues yet, again, if ever. And if you're looking at, I think to understand the shoulder, we have to recognize fundamentally that this is not a therapeutic, but an educational issue. Mm-hmm. In general, we haven't done that.
Yeah.
Okay, direction. Let's talk about that part of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're, I mentioned you could do procedures that help the shoulder, like a very simple one, lying down, putting your arm out so that the arm is in a supported position. That may not seem like a lot, but if you just put your forearm on the table so that your arm is now supported, you'll notice that this area around here is not, if you're holding your arm in the air, you'll notice this is going to be working. The whole region around the deltoid, the rotator cuff, is going to be doing work because you're having to support your arm in space. If you place your forearm on the table, that whole area will soften, the whole region around the rotator cuff, around the joint, because you're not having to hold up the arm.
Right.
That will now reduce the amount of effort you're using in these muscles, and they'll have a better chance of letting go. So as simple as that is, it's important to recognize that by putting yourself in, you know, providing the supportive position that enables muscles to stop doing anything, which is non-doing, you know, practicing non-doing, you're going to already be helping that area, which is often overworking and tight and held.
Yeah.
But in addition, now you can begin to use your awareness or thought process to bring about changes. So, for instance, I was thinking about this as a simple way to talk about direction here, because we're just, you know, if we were introducing it, you know, cold. If I want to grasp something, I don't think about what muscles to use. My thought of grasping an object will trigger activity in all these forearm muscles that act on the hand at the wrist and act on the fingers, and it will trigger activity in some of the muscles in the hand itself. Thumb will all contract in response to my wish to grab something. That's clear. We all know that. That's what we do when we exercise. You know, you lift a weight, and the desire to lift the weight is going to bring into play the flexors of the arm and shoulder, et cetera.
Yeah.
If in contrast, you don't grasp something, but in a supported position, let's say with your hand like this, you think of your fingers lengthening this way. So you're not grasping, but you're actually thinking of the fingers, not letting go, but lengthening that way. Mm-hmm. Now, instead of the wish to grasp something, causing muscles to contract, now the wish for the fingers to come out of the hand or forearm will inhibit the action of these muscles, which will tend to lengthen. And you could try it instead of doing this to contract these muscles. If you think of your fingers lengthening that way, that's sort of the converse or the opposite. It's going to tell these muscles to let go, so that now the fingers will let go out of the forearm instead of the forearm contracting to move the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Call that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a thought process that that has an inhibitory effect on muscles that want to tighten.
Mm-hmm.
And with the fingers starting to lengthen out of the hand and wrist and forearm, it will bring about more length in these muscles. So now it's not just, now in addition to supporting the arm on the table, now we're using a thought process and an awareness process to bring about more length in muscles. And we could do it from here to here, fingertips to elbow. We could do it from elbow to shoulder, and we could do it across the shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thought process that will now actively begin to bring about length. And even total beginners can do this if you just have your hands on the table and you begin to think of length from here to here, or the fingers lengthening out of here. You might begin to get an awareness of all of this letting go. You might
fingertips to the elbows.
Yeah. Or and then elbows to shoulders.
Yeah.
It will come into your awareness. If it comes into your awareness, it probably means you're beginning to reduce the amount of firing to the muscles. The muscles are actually letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And you can think it from here to here.
Yeah.
There's a lot from
shoulder across the chest to the shoulder.
Yep.
Yeah.
So now you're using a thought process to bring about an improvement and a letting go in this musculature. And if you're really practiced at it, you can unravel and unwind the entire shoulder girdle. It'll open up like this right across the chest, right across the back, because it will affect the whole back musculature. And you could literally, again, with skill and practice, you could bring about an opening and widening that will restore the natural working of the shoulder girdle. Using a procedure and a supported position, that procedure, and thinking. And it's a really practical way to start making changes. Now, in general, if you do that, you want it to be in conjunction with an awareness of the body as a whole, because the shoulders work as part of the overall upright support system. So you want the upright support system to be your first kind of priority. And secondly, you can add the shoulders. We're focusing on the shoulders just to look at that today as a...
Yeah. And, you know, just to make it clear, because I know that this has happened before. What you're saying is this thinking process. You know, you described it as like you're preventing the firing of messages to contract. You know, you started out with a supported position, which allowed, for instance, the shoulder muscles to stop contracting to hold it up. And you're elaborating on that simple thing right there, that you know, the muscles have a chance to not contract, the muscles have a chance to not be firing off in activity. You're not saying, you're thinking about lengthening the muscles telescopically as though you can like lengthen a muscle like you can lengthen a pole or something like this.
Yeah.
This is the muscles not firing. This is the muscles being prevented from contracting through your own thought process, and they will release into more length, more like in an elastic way.
Yeah, exactly.
They will release into being longer.
Yeah, exactly. A muscle can't lengthen by its own action. I mean, it's like saying a rope can lengthen. A rope can, resist being pulled apart. Or if it's, if it had the ability a muscle has, it would be able to shorten along its length and actually pull. It can't push open. I mean, that's not what a muscle does. But when we think of a muscle only in terms of how it contracts or shortens along its length, we're not really understanding the reality of muscles. They don't just shorten. They need to have a natural length. Mm-hmm. And here we're taking time to give support to body parts so that muscle and thinking in order to allow muscles to resume their natural length or let go, as you say, to let go into length and become more elastic. And all you got to do is look at a two-year-old and you'll see what that feels like when it's working perfectly, because their muscle tissue never feels like it's like it is in adults, contracted and stiffened.
Yeah.
Always pliable and spongy and
lively
to the touch.
Yeah. And that this is part of the we were talking before, this is part of the design spec of the body. This is part of the evolutionary design of the vertebrate mammalian primate postural mechanism, or the muscle system in general, that the muscles, yes, they have this contractile quality, like you said, about a rope, but they can't like telescope into being longer voluntarily. Part of their design spec is to, absorb energy through stretch and to be stretched, to be on stretch as part of their natural function.
Right. Because they're suspended within muscles. So that's part and connective tissues and muscles are suspended within bones. So they don't just pull, they're also pulled on or suspended and that's true of all. I mean, I would say that's true throughout nature, not just primate. It's true. It's even in fish. It's true of all vertebrates. Lots of other animals, have, aspects of this dynamic, this polar dynamic of tissues that are lengthened or,
Incredible efficiency and incredible power storage. Incredible, speed, but also incredible stability in a field of gravity. Gravity, I just said gravity, but, in incredible stability, like the 2-year-old kid that you're talking about, they're, it's always a thing, they're sitting on their butts on the ground with their legs out. Totally comfortable. Their back is just like ramrod straight, but they're totally completely comfortable. And they can use their arms powerfully. They can lift things, they can grab, they can do all this other stuff, but there's something about their, how nature has composed this thing is that it's based in part on the elasticity or this interesting pull portion of this object,
And
so what you're talking about now is how to restore it,
When when a child, a young child is sitting, there's no sign anywhere of tension, and they could sit like that apart from getting fussy, because they're little kids and they're, starting to feel uncomfortable or want to feed or something. Apart from that, that's more metabolic and kind of, that, they sit for as long as they need to, completely comfortably, like I'm taking this right out of the book, but like this child.
Yeah.
The photograph I took in the park and how beautifully he was sitting and how beautifully he sat, and the back is completely, the back is doing work Otherwise, he would not be able to sit. I mean, it's supporting him, but with complete flexibility and elasticity. Mm-hmm. So we see muscle working the way it's designed to work there.
And for, you know, folks who are listening and they don't have the video, this is just an average kid playing in the fountain. He's got this very cute little blue outfit on. He must be what, 11 months old, 13 months old, something like this?
Think? I think younger, because I'm not sure he was even walking yet, you know.
Yeah, so maybe 8-9 months old, something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
And like, he's just very cute. He's very fat, like, you know, like a little kid is. And he's just sitting with his legs out in front of him, enjoying life. And he is just like perfectly coordinated, perfectly straight up, with no sense of discomfort, or you could just tell he's just enjoying life.
Right. And that just to mention this, because we're, you know, we've covered the topic we wanted to touch on, which is what can you do in a practical way to restore the system when parts are not working properly? Mm-hmm. But that gives you a clue to how the back works. In the same way that the shoulders widen, the back works to work properly in such a way that the muscles are not pulling on the spine and shortening and bunching up, particularly around the lower back where you feel the bulging muscles.
Yeah.
Instead, the muscles are lengthening so that they're not only acting on the spine, but in a sense, they're suspended between parts of the spine and the back fills out. So a back that is naturally lengthening and widening is the property of the back. It's the design spec for how the back works.
Mm.
When it's working well. And a back that's working like that is almost hard to injure it, because the forces are distributed so evenly that the back becomes very much, you know, strong and solid.
Yeah.
It sort of functions as a unity. And again, you can show someone that and say, let me show you how the back can work well. They're not going to believe it. If they think that they've got a problem that needs to be treated, they're going to sort of revert to their own idea of what they think needs to be treated or fixed. But it's pretty clear that the back works in such a way that it needs to fill out and lengthen.
Yeah. And so all of the practical things that someone can do are based around this, are based around just like, you know, the here's kind of how the back can work. Here's how the shoulders can work. So getting someone to support certain body parts, you can feel pretty clearly that, if I have a tendency to be lifting up my shoulder or to be, maybe tense there all the time, if I just sort of support the shoulder, it's pretty clear that muscles can let go and, can kind of relax, and it might be more comfortable for you if you can support it, say, on the table, like you just said, It would make sense, therefore, to support other body parts as well.
Yep.
So that they can, so all those muscles have a chance to let go. And then think like you just said, see if you can prevent grabbing onto your muscles like you normally do.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you do in the developmental movement, one of the primary starting points is the semi-supine position. So supine on your back, not on your front, but modified with books under your head and your knees up, because that helps the spine restore length to the muscles when they've been shortening, chronically or habitually shortening. And that's a practical procedure you could do to help restore that lengthened condition of the back.
Yeah.
So it's the single most important thing that I've in a way ever learned as a practical procedure. Even before I knew anything about the subject, I got more benefit from that than I did from all the exercises and stretching I'd done, because that simple position allows the back to become restored naturally, whereas everything else was just trying to fix something that someone thought was wrong. And that doesn't even begin to address the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, so
thinking about how many muscles are involved, you can't figure them out individually. You have to understand the conditions under which the muscles can organize themselves.
Yes. And so here, you're not, you're neither pulling on muscles, you're not exercising them, but you're also not like releasing them into flaccidity. It's more like it's you know, it's something profound. It's like you're leaving yourself alone. You're intelligently leaving yourself alone so that like a natural system can restore itself. And that's not flaccidity. It's not relaxation. It's not even really release so much as it is, you know, the only word is restoration yeah. of function.
Yeah. And again, even total beginners can, if you give them a few minutes to try that out, they might begin to feel that things will automatically begin to just feel better. It won't at that stage, it won't often make much of a difference, but it's enough to see that if you do that repeatedly over a period of time, it'll begin to restore the muscular system.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, your wrist might start to feel better. It might open up a little bit. It's like, wow, that's nice. You know, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll randomly, like if your shoulders begin to change, it'll affect the whole arm. So often you'll feel some indirect improvement because the working of the wrist and hand is so dependent on the shoulder. If you have a wrist or hand problem, it's going to be always related to something going on in the shoulder as well. If you restore the shoulder, sometimes the hand will just naturally feel a little better. And yeah, I think as a follow-up, James, we talked about maybe doing a little more about this topic of sensory motor awareness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, cause there's a whole, you know, like there's a lot to be said about this, you know? Yeah. And it's, yeah, this is a very interesting way of looking at like this, it's a very interesting and like, I don't want to say simple. I don't know. It's just like, it's just a nice way of looking at this. You're supporting your body and you're just thinking to just, you know, not grip on, and you're trusting your body that good things are going to happen. So, just to
follow up on that idea, when people want to fix something and they have their own belief about something being wrong, it's always expressed as a lack of trust.
Yeah.
If something wrong, I don't believe it could work right. Someone's got to fix it for me.
Yeah.
That in a way is a negative approach. It's not actually, you're not actually looking to, you don't actually believe it could be healthy. You think there's something wrong and you're hoping some expert can fix it for you so you can just get back to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Knowing how to trust the body to work properly, that's a whole different ballgame. It takes time to change your belief so you do trust the body.
But yeah. Anyway, interesting. Well, yeah. So looking forward to talking more about this. Yeah, we'll be talking about more of this next time. So
yeah, good.
Thanks.
Maybe
for
a follow-up topic next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this has been The Awareness Connection. Like and subscribe. Thanks for the conversation, Ted.
Thank you, James. Thanks all.
Thanks for listening, everybody.